The question was asked about a rabbi's giving halachic ruling about a matter that he seems to have partiality towards. The Gemara records this discussion. The Gemara asks, can a rabbi rule for his wife when she is pure, when she isn't? Can a rabbi rule on his own cattle that's slaughtered, whether the shechita was kosher or not? It's interesting that the Gemara records that there were rabbis whose wives would not ask them the questions, because they said, you're very God-fearing, I know you. If there'll be any room for doubt, you're going to be stringent. I want to go to some other rabbi, because for some other rabbi is going to say, either it's mutter or usher. I don't have to suffer all the stringencies in the world. When we speak about a rabbi, so hopefully we're talking about someone who deserves the title. Today, the title has become widespread. Someone once said, you want to get rabbinic ordination, so become a pre-1A Rebbe. Start teaching pre-1A. Start teaching pre-1A. First grade, you're automatically rabbi, right? The first grade rabbi could be Big Tam Chacham, could be has rabbinic ordination. But it could be someone who's fresh out of high school who got the job and he's still rabbi so-and-so. Could be both. Today, the title rabbi is given freely. Like Mr. Right. Anyone that has a position in... anyone that has some kind of official position within Judaism is given the title rabbi. You're the principal of a school, you're given the title rabbi. Could be you don't know much about halacha, but bottom line, you're given that title. Today it became a title for someone who has an official position within a Jewish institution. But... historically, the term had more weight. And when we're speaking about rabbis now, I want to just be clear that we're talking about someone who hopefully deserves the title, someone who has rabbinic ordination, who has studied and has perfected his trades. I can't say that's the case today. I mean, today the term rabbi, as we just explained, is used freely. But let's go back to the time of the Talmud. If someone was a rabbi back then, he needed to be willing to give up a lot, and he needed to be a God-fearing person. And the Gemara says that a person, a true Talmud Chacham, will be able to see his own cattle when it's slaughtered, and give halachic ruling on it. Now the term that the Gemara uses is ro'et refa le'atzmo. He sees for himself when he sees his animal slaughtered, so he recognizes when it's taref. That's the simple understanding. Rav Avadia Yosef writes in one of his responses, he says, an introduction to one of his books, he says that in his opinion, in order for a person to be a really great rabbi, he has to be able to be lenient for himself. Because what happens when one starts learning and one works on his traits, the first tendency is to be stringent. When a person is really trying to be a God-fearing person, so the first tendency is to say about anything that there's small room for doubt, forbidden. And that's not a great rabbi. That's a person who's very God-fearing, but he hasn't learned enough. So that's why Rav Avadia writes on that Gemara, he says that what the Gemara means is that he's on the level that he's already reached the level where he's so scared, he's so God-fearing that he wants to be stringent on everything, and he's attained the next level, which is that in spite of that, he could recognize the truth when he has to be lenient and be lenient. Why? Because the default is always to be stringent. The default is always to say, okay, I'll forgo my money, I'll forgo eating meat this Shabbos. We're thinking in our terms today, this animal isn't kosher, I'll buy another one. Back in those days, if the rabbi said this meat wasn't kosher, it could mean he was going without meat for 2 or 3 weeks. That was the meat he had. If he said that shechita wasn't good, he might not have meat for another month, definitely another week. And he just incurred a tremendous loss, monetarily. So nonetheless, the assumption was, and should be, ideally, that the person is so God-fearing that his default is always going to be to forgo his own. And that's why on most issues we do trust a rabbi to paskin for himself. There were things that our sages said that they saw that people were not trustworthy on. For example, a kohen, if he has a bechor, the firstborn animal, so ordinarily we'd like to trust the kohen, but it was a pain in the neck to take that animal in a holy fashion up to the temple and bring it as sacrifice there. If that animal got a blemish, got a certain scrape, certain cut, certain blemishes, you could eat it the way you want it. So the Gemara says that we don't trust Kohanim, because Kohanim had a huge temptation to cause these blemishes to the animals. The Mishnah discusses that he'd put a piece of dough on the animal's ear so that a dog would come by and bite off that dough and give a blemish to the ear. So the Mishnah says that Kohanim, they want to save themselves that pain in the neck of traveling up to Jerusalem and eating the bechor, the firstborn animal impurity. So therefore the conclusion was, we don't trust anyone and we don't let anyone paskin for themselves. But that's because they made a blanket ruling, blanket statement. In general, we do trust. And if you want to read more about this, Rav Eliyahu writes, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, in his introduction to the book Tarat Bat Yisrael, the book on family purity, he also writes about this. He expands on this. This is just an intro that, as far as perspective goes, for sure there's going to be a conflict of interest. No one's saying that just because someone's a rabbi it means that he hates his money, he wants to forgo his money. For sure, a rabbi also cares about himself and his money and his family. At the same time, very often where we do allow a rabbi to give halachic ruling, it's because we trust that the God-fearingness of the person is going to overtake him. Does that mean that is always the case? If you're reading a Tana and a Mora, an accepted rabbi, then you could assume yes. Today, I don't know.
So
in Rav's case, you could assume that. Yeah, Rav wouldn't. The Gemara says Rav didn't say a word that wasn't holy. Rav lo sach sichat chorin mi'amav. He never had a conversation that was just for the heck of it. Rav, that's how great Rav was. But that's Rav in his generation. Today, obviously, we're not on that level, but we'd like, if a rabbi is going to give ruling, he should at least be on the other level. I can tell you that in my house, very often I don't give ruling. I don't want to be too stringent. If I'll give ruling, I'll be too cautious. You know what? Sometimes you don't have to be so cautious. I bought a bag of carrots this week, and there was a question whether you had to take off trumas and maestras. Huge sack of carrots. And I wanted to be stringent. I said, okay, so I'll lose a carrot. I'll take off trumas and maestras. But the problem is that taking off that carrot means you're throwing out that carrot. You're wrapping it up and it's not being eaten. So that's a chumra on one side, it's a kula on the other side. You're not allowed to do baal pashlus just because you want to be machmir. So today, kohanim aren't pure. The kohen also can't eat it. So I went to another rabbi. I went to someone else. I said, look, I want you to give ruling over here. So he started saying you could be lenient. So I argued with him for 5 minutes, telling him why you should be stringent. So after 5 minutes, he was convinced. He said, you're right. Take off trumas and maestras. So I said, wait a second. Then I argued with him for 5 minutes the other way. And then, right, I told you, we have something in common. So then ultimately came that conclusion. I didn't want to give ruling on my own. On the other hand, I had logic why I wanted to say both ways. And I wanted him to give the final ruling. So he did. We hope that a person is going to have enough God-fearingness about himself that he should give ruling or recognize that he can't. I've had times that people came to me and I said, you know what? I feel like I'm not partial. I'm not impartial here. I can't answer you. There are times that people came to me for advice and I said, look, I want you to know. I had once I was selling a store. And the guy asked me, what do you think? Should I take the store? So I told him, before I answer you, I want you to know I'm not impartial. I want you to buy the store. If you want to hear my opinion nonetheless, I'll tell you. My opinion is you shouldn't buy the store. But I sat with him for 5 minutes, told him, I'll explain to you why I don't think you should buy the store. But I'm impartial. Why did I tell him that? Because I knew my tendency would be to go to the opposite extreme. Because I'm impartial and I want to sell him the store, so in order to guard that partiality, I'll go to the opposite extreme and I'll try to convince him not to buy the store. But maybe he should buy the store. Maybe it is good for him. So you understand, it's a sort of lose-lose situation. Unless you're being straight, unless you're being honest, you've lost. So the best thing I could do is lay the cards on the table and tell him, I want you to know I'm impartial, and nonetheless, this is what I think. But that's we strive for it. It's not easy. Yeah?
Just what is the first explanation around the cow situation?
The simple understanding is that a person should be on the level that he recognizes, even if it's his own cow, even if he's going to incur the loss, if it's a taref, he says it's taref, that's the way he should be. That's the simple understanding. Okay, now, just...